Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. Our guest today is author Rivera Sun. Rivera lives in an earthship in the high desert of New Mexico. She gets up before dawn and starts her day by drinking poo-er tea and baking bread in her outdoor adobe clay oven. Rivera has written 8 theatrical plays, published 2 books of inspirational poetry, 2 breathtaking novels, and written/performed many dance theater productions. Her work has received standing ovations from coast to coast and touched the hearts and souls of many. And today she'll be on the soapbox talking about her new novel called The Dandelion Insurrection. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Rivera Sun. Rivera Sun, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks, Cindy. It's great to be on your show.
Well, very cool. I want more people to learn about your book. And can you tell us a little bit about your book and just give us a basic overview of it before we get deeper and more deeply into it?
Oh, sure. The Dandelion Insurrection is a novel of love and revolution, rescuing democracy from the grip of a corporate dictatorship. And at this point, my people are often like, are you sure this is fiction?
Mm-hmm. unless it's sci-fi or horror, fiction actually more often than not mirrors real life, don't you think?
It certainly does, and the Dandelion Insurrection does it in very interesting ways in which we project forward some of the more disturbing trends that are going on in the United States around militarization of the police, centralization of power, political power, climate change, the authoritarian control of over our civil liberties. We paint a little bit of a bleak picture of what we're headed to just around the corner today. But a story is made in the foment between what is frightening us and what is exciting us. So in the midst of this time in the Dandelion Insurrection, you have characters who come out and they use the tools and strategies of nonviolent struggle to stage an uprising to restore democracy to the people.
Well, what inspired you to write Dandelion Insurrection?
I was looking around at our world today, and as you know, and as many of us are increasingly becoming aware, we face some really severe, dire issues here in the United States and globally. And I really feel like we have this amazing toolbox of resources that has been brought to us through the ages, through subsequent waves of amazing teachers and a whole lineage of people who have practiced nonviolent struggle around the world. And I felt like people in our time now, especially America, whether this is intentional or not, we aren't aware of a lot of our legacy that has been brought through the struggle for civil rights, the struggle for suffrage, the struggle for labor reforms, and many, many other struggles. We aren't taught the tools in school. We aren't taught how to use them and apply them. And so in the Dandelion Instruction, I used fiction as a way to start sharing some of those tools and showing people like you and like me and many of the people we know engaged in the work that we ourselves see needs to happen, addressing the corruption of power, addressing the trend towards dictatorships versus democracies. And this, I felt like if I could make this into an entertaining, grasping, fascinating story for people, we'd take it in a little bit. And so far, so good. The response from readers has been very enthusiastic, very fired up about this subject, about what's possible. I hear from readers a lot asking, how can we make the Dandelion Insurrection real? And the good news is people have answers for that. You know, there's amazing resources out there in the world, such as the Albert Einstein Institution, popularresistance.org, wagingnonviolence.org, Training for Change, the Meta Center. The list just goes on and on of the wonderful people who are actually doing the work that I, you know, so imaginatively put into my novel.
Why is it a dandelion insurrection?
That's a great question. Dandelions are this wonderful flower that's actually an edible medicinal plant that we consider a weed. And we spend a lot of time and effort, particularly on the East Coast, that's where I grew up, trying to get rid of the dandelions. But they're indomitable. They just will spring up no matter what you do. You will see them in concrete cracks in the sidewalks of cities. You will see them in lawns. You will see the children, and this is the secret to their indomitability. You will see the children picking the old, tired heads of dandelions and making wishes on them, and then blowing those wishes out onto the breath of the wind. And it is through accepting as people and as dandelions the wishes of others and doing our best to make them come true that we too achieve a certain sort of indomitability, a courage in the face of adversity, and an ability to shine despite all of the things going on in our society to weigh us down. So I also found out along the way of this that the dandelion is a recurring theme of insurrection and rebellion and movements, the movement for the new society. They published a journal that was called The Dandelion. There's a current contemporary online journal called Dandelion Salad, which is also a wonderful blog, and I'll get back to that later, because they're actually publishing a series of companion essays to the book that were written by one of the characters in the book but aren't actually in the novel itself. So those come out as a weekly series, which is very fun for people.
Well, you might as well tell us about that while you're talking about it.
That's true. So the main characters in the Dandelion Insurrection are a young woman named Zadie Bird Gray, who is a kind of a wild adventurer and really a revolutionary, kind of stirring up change and fomenting revolution. Her counterpart is Charlie Ryder, who is a local reporter for his small hometown, who gets dragged into the mix of this. In part because of his friend Zadie, but also in part because of his heart. His heart cares about what's going on. So he starts writing under an alias called The Man from the North. And these essays start to stir people throughout the country. And because of the corporate control of the media and our freedom of speech, he's not allowed to actually publish these. So they get passed hand to hand and read in bed at night, and wonderful adventures like that. But his essays actually foment the revolution that unfolds in the Dandelion Insurrection. So what Dandelion Salad, the online journal, has agreed to do is publish a series of these essays by the Man from the North. They come out on Sundays, and they cover everything from corporate tyranny, to militarization of our police forces, to real-life dandelion insurrection stories, strategies of nonviolent struggle. And I've been very happy to see the pleased reception that they've had. People really love these essays.
Well, great. And what's the link for the blog? I will put it in my newsletter also, but if you give it over the air, some people might be able to check it sooner.
It's called www.dandelionsalad/wpblog, I believe. If you just Google Dandelion Salad, you will find it. It comes right up.
Dandelion Salad has published a lot of my essays also. Lo Daniels is a very good person, and she helps the struggle a lot with her blog. Your I think you're right about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so much to talk about what's going on right now in our world. We're really in a crux of time for making social change. That's one thing that makes me very happy about the release of the Dandelion Injection right now, is that it's really needed. We need to capture the imaginations of people throughout our country and the world, and also let them know about the sort of things that actually are going on kind of beneath their radar, of courageous people who are taking a stand for what is leading towards a more sustainable possibility for all of us.
Well, let's get back to the nuts and bolts of your novel. How did you do the research? I've written 7 books, but they've all been nonfiction. I don't know. I suspect that's a little easier to write than fiction. So how did you research?
Well, you know, with a book like The Dandelion Injection, on the one hand, you have to find out what the issues are. And that takes paying attention to what's going on in contemporary media, or on the alternative media scene is where you'll probably find most of these stories, or at least that's where I did. And then on the other hand, you have to look for the solutions to these problems, which actually could be harder to find in a literal sense. So what I did was I actually looked for how to stop a dictator. Because in my novel, I posit that we're actually in the grip of a hidden dictatorship, something that's parading around as democracy, but isn't really.
Right.
I Google. We all Google everything, right? How to Stop a Dictator. And up comes this book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, by Gene Sharp, on the Albert Einstein Institution website.
Oh, yeah.
You can download it. So I download it, and I find out along the way that this book has been used all around the world, in about 13 countries at least at this point, to actually bring down dictators. And as I read this book, it reframed my entire understanding of nonviolent struggle. That I think I went into this project with kind of a more common idea of what nonviolent struggle is. I thought about protests, and I thought about demonstrations and signing petitions. Gene Sharp and many other scholars of this field offer a totally different picture of that, about where true political power lies, which is always in the hands of the people, but how we wield that political power. And so I kind of went down the rabbit hole of learning as much as I could about this field, about the people who think strategically about nonviolent struggle, how to look at the pillars of support for the ruling class or the oppressive regime, where they get their power from, what they rely on for their stability, and then how to erode those and how to replace that with the strength of the opposition movement, and how to actually grow a movement from the grassroots up, and to topple tyranny from its throne and power. So that is one thing that I learned on this process, is that we have a tremendous amount of resources out there in the world, and it's very exciting at this time when we're faced with such dire problems to know that we don't have to reinvent the wheel or even invent the wheel the first time, but that we have this at our fingertips right now. And I really keep urging everyone to go to the Albert Einstein Institution website, download everything that's for free on that website, go and give them a donation if you can, buy their books if you can, because you know, sometimes I sit at home and I wonder how long we're actually going to have access to this information. But one thing that's not a question is that we need to know this information broadly throughout our public at this time. So that was part of the journey of researching, is something that continues for me to this day, that when you write a novel like The Dandelion Injection, people start asking you, what do you think we should do about such and such? And sometimes I'm like, maybe I should have written a nonfiction book like you, Cindy. And then I could really be an authority on this subject. But, you know, I wrote a novel, which means that I keep I get to pass people on to the authorities of this subject, and that's a really wonderful process.
Well, I do have a question for you that came out of what you were just saying. I have, you know, in my own activism deduced that, you know, revolution is the only solution to what we're going through right now. I don't think reform might help, you know, a small segment of the population for a short time. But I've looked at revolution. In fact, my sixth book was called Revolution, a Love Story, about the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela and about President Hugo Chavez. But what I see about revolution is that the revolution is nonviolent. The revolution starts with demands and demands for the people, but the violence comes from the oppressors and the counter-revolution. Does that happen? You know, unfortunately, I haven't had time to read your book, so I'm glad we're talking about it. Does that happen in your book where the oppressor class violently puts down a nonviolent a struggle for change? And I think the reaction to that counter-revolution is basically self-defense and defense of the revolution. So can you tell me your thoughts about that, or if anything like that happens in your book?
Sure. It would be overly idealistic to posit a nonviolent struggle in which there was not repression. That has never actually happened on this planet, to our knowledge.
Right.
And so it is an element that I tried to bring into the novel, along with, you know, state surveillance, violation of laws, and incredibly laws that infringe on our civil liberties as we know them now. The use of violence as a repressive force does occur in the Dandelion Insurrection. Martial law is imposed at one point. And the ways that we have seen around the world that people respond to this, and you probably know that from researching your novel, is that incredible courage is required at those moments, because violence is almost always used in some form by the oppressor to ensure their position.
Right.
With a nonviolent struggle, you have an opportunity for something that Gene Sharp calls political jujitsu, in which the violence of the oppressive regime can be aikidoed. It can be turned around into an opportunity to build support for the movement. And this is a very particular situation that unfolds that needs to be studied and understood how it works very carefully. But in the Dandelion Insurrection, there are several moments of turning different kinds of oppression, not just violent oppression, on their head, turning it around to support the movement itself, and really aikidoing the excessive force that's brought by the state. And that's one of the great things about the Dandelion Insurrection, is that it does show examples of people doing that, because these are the kind of things that we ourselves need to have in our toolbox of awareness. Because, yeah, if we're looking at revolution, we got to know that it's not going to be an easy thing. It's not going to be we all march to Washington and take it over. That's not how this works. No, marches and demonstrations are mainly symbolic.
Right.
And they serve a real purpose, but they must be paired with non-cooperation, civil disobedience, economic constraints of your oppressors, power, strikes, boycotts, the ability of the civil servants to slow down the operation of the oppressive regime. And these are all things that I put into the Dandelion Insurrection to demonstrate people doing these actions so we know what we can do.
What about creating institutions apart from the empire? You know, I wrote a book also called Myth America, the 20 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution, where I suggested that we create our own, local food production, cooperatives and everything, education, healthcare, childcare, local trade and local currency. Do you address that in the Dandelion interaction?
I do to a small extent. It's definitely an important theme, and I love that you talk so much about it because it is one of the most empowering and effective ways to shift power, because it does replace the power structure. It replaces the basic needs that we need. So in the Dandelion Insurrection, I do bring that up as how is the movement going to support and sustain itself? Loaves of bread don't just fall from the sky. One thing that they do very effectively is that they create an alternative internet called the Alternet.
Oh, cool.
And this is a huge thing because it is secure and it allows them to communicate. And in our time right now of, the NSA revelations that Snowden brought us, we know that this phone call right now is being recorded somewhere, and possibly listened to, possibly not. We don't know, but it will be listened to at some point if they want to.
Right.
So in the Dandelion Instruction, the ability to communicate was a huge turning point in the story, in that they were really hampered by their inability to communicate, although they used both openness and secrecy when it was tactically sensible, which is another thing that we have to deal with in real life nonviolent struggle, is that dynamic between the two.
What really gets me, Rivera, is, first of all, I think our biggest obstacle is convincing our fellow humans here in the borders of the United States that we are being profoundly oppressed, and that their struggles are not their own fault, they're the fault of the system. But another thing that really gets me is that the hypocrisy of the empire, saying that we are a global force for good in the world, and that and that our fellow humans residing within these borders, many of them don't see this hypocrisy. What are your thoughts on that?
I am constantly flabbergasted by the bald-faced lying that goes on. I'm an actress as well, and so I study these actors on the political stage, and I'm kind of amazed at what they can do. I mean, I wish I had half of their acting ability, and I'd probably get an Oscar. And the most amazing part is that they're convincing everyone of these complete lies and fabrication and lip service and slogans that aren't real to any depth. I mean, to purport that we're bringing democracy anywhere, that we're bringing justice and freedom anywhere, when we ourselves in the United States are increasingly facing a loss of democracy, even the slight nuances of democracy that we had, and a loss of civil liberties, which are constantly being eroded, and a loss of our freedom of speech especially, which was such a prized value. We have a long way to go down the slippery slope towards an authoritarian, completely outright, out in the open authoritarian dictatorship regime.
Totalitarian?
Yeah, both is the nuance between them, but it's not. One of the things I say in the Dandelion Insurrection is that these very colloquial characters go through the litany of, do we have a corporatocracy, a plutocracy, a dictatorship, or what have you? Finally,
right.
They just say, you know what? It doesn't matter what you call it, because we don't have a real democracy.
Right. That's why I'm not on Facebook anymore, because those discussions were annoying to me. But I do follow you on Twitter, and you have a wonderful way with words. But one thing I want to ask you is, you know, in the basic synopsis, you say that the dandelion insurrection is a nonviolent struggle to rescue American democracy. What is your definition of American democracy?
That is a really great question. And here you have the play between the positing of a story and a personal opinion on the subject. The Dandelion Insurrection is posited as rescuing American democracy, and they found their principles on restoring the democracy that's outlined in the Constitution. With the addition of the amendments that granted the rights that were initially granted to just white men, to all people.
White men, property, and owners. Not right. All white men, just white men that own property.
Exactly. So I had to make a distinction there that they're not going that far back, which some people today would like to do. They're looking at what we think of as our constitutional representational style of democracy, although they do start working into more participatory direct forms of democracy. Mm-hmm. I chose to posit the Dandelion Insurrection there because I wanted to make a meeting ground between radicals and revolutionaries and the people who often don't really know what's going on in our country, and find a place where the two groups could meet for the purposes of a fictional story. Now, on a personal opinion level, I would like to see what we think of as democracy in this country go much further than it is. I would like to see people really prize an actual involvement of citizens, a more direct form of democracy. I think we've witnessed representational democracy become more and more and more corrupt over the years. I would like to see us remove corporate personhood, which is also something that they talk about in the Dandelion Insurrection. We're not a big fan of corporate personhood.
Representative democracy, they don't represent the people. They represent, you know, the military-industrial complex, the Wall Street, Big Pharma, HMOs, on and on and on. The prison industrial complex, I think that's where our representational democracy has degenerated into.
Right. And I'm sure this is one of the conversations on Facebook that can get annoying, but there is an element of it that's very important. Is a representational democracy necessarily corrupt? Is it necessarily narrow in its forms of representation, who the constituency is that's empowered, or not? And we can go around in circles on that for a long time, but I personally am very interested in more direct participatory forms of democracy.
Awesome. Well, Rivera, we're out of time now, so can you tell my listeners, our listeners, where they can get more information about the Dandelion Insurrection and hopefully order the book?
Yeah, the Dandelion Insurrection can be found on all major online bookstores at this point. You can also order it directly from me at www.risingsundancetheater.com/WP blog. That's my personal blog, and you can order my books right there, risingsundancetheater/WP blog. And if you do that, then I always try to tuck something a little special in it to say thank you for supporting a real author rather than make a corporation.
Okay, very cool, Rivera-san. Thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and I wish you and us all revolution.
As they say in the Dandelion Insurrection, if you want to do something truly radical, be kind, be connected, be unafraid.
Perfect. That's a perfect way to end. Rivera-san, again, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, that's the soapbox for today. I hope you're having a great weekend no matter what you're doing, and I hope you have a wonderful upcoming week. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar of CPR Metro Radio, my guest, Rivera Sun, you for listening and supporting the show most of all. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.